welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn. This is episode 195 of the podcast, and it is 12th of September 2014 as I record this. Now, today I have an interview with my friend Orna Ross. I like to call her my mentor as well, although she's kind of unofficial, but I learn a lot from Orna. And today we talk about her new book, Making Money, Making Meaning, which is interesting in that the title contains the word money, because Orna is a poet and writes literary fiction. So this interview is kind of an unexpected angle, I think. She's certainly the opposite of gung-ho, Kindle gold rush kind of, you know, money talk. It's not at all about that kind of thing. We don't even mention optimizing algorithms or sales on Amazon. This is a much bigger concept around money mindset. So I think you'll find this really interesting. I certainly did, and I've read the book, and it's certainly great to talk to Orna about it. So it's really about the creative process as it relates to money. So I hope it helps you as it did me to talk through these things. I am off to Stockholm this weekend, so that's why I'm recording this a few days early. I'm speaking at several events for authors and entrepreneurs, and I've never been to Stockholm before. I've been to Finland. I worked in Finland one summer during the long sunny nights, but I've never been to Stockholm, to Sweden, and there are lots of islands I see, so I'm quite excited about. I've got an extra day to have a look around, so I'll certainly be sharing some pictures on social media about that. The rewrites of How to Market a Book are done, and I'm just sorting out the new print edition, and the ebook version will be up in the next couple of weeks. If you already have the ebook, you'll be able to get the new edition in a very good deal in November, which I'll announce nearer the time. So don't worry about that. You won't be out of pocket to get the latest version. I've also finished the audiobook edition of Business for Authors, and I'm now writing lots of launch posts. I'm very much looking forward to getting this out the way so I can get back to writing fiction. I feel like my head has kind of taken over. But I do feel as if something has come to an end with this book. I feel like I've finally worked out how the business works, and now I can get back to creativity. And I actually have a post on the blog today. It is my third anniversary as a full-time author entrepreneur. So I've got my usual lessons learned from X years as an author entrepreneur. Today is number three. And there are links to the day I resigned and also my lessons learned from year one and year two if you want to look back. I think they're useful if you want to do this full-time, because certainly what I learned in the first year was really quite interesting around, you know, changing routines and things. So, but this year I'm open about how I'm making my money, and then I write down a few things about what I've learned. I also have a picture of me on the tall ship Soren Larsen, which I sailed in 1999, blue water sailing from Fiji to Vanuatu. So you know, that's when you aren't in sight of land anymore and you get terrible seasickness for not very long. I was fine, really. But it's interesting in that post, you know, as usual, I share quite openly, but I share a quote from T.S. Eliot, which feels right at the moment, which is, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." And that's kind of how I feel at the moment. I feel that I've been spending the last couple of years learning learning the craft, learning, you know, the bones of how to write fiction, learning marketing, learning speaking, learning creative business, you know, doing an apprenticeship in being a creative entrepreneur and doing this for a living. Obviously, I've put this into practice, as in I've got 12 books, I've sold 250,000 of them, of 58 countries sold in, 4 languages. But I feel like I'm going back to the beginning again. And that beginning is creativity. And I also feel like, you know, it's probably that, you know, your conscious incompetence, and now I'm, what am I, consciously competent or something, and now I need to become unconsciously confident. I can't remember that. It's one of those consulting change management-y things. But I feel like I now need to unlearn some of these things and let my unconscious, my subconscious out, and allow my creativity to just run. And I talk a bit about finding my voice in that post. So yeah, I'm going through this interesting shift at the moment. I'm starting to learn more about play, which is funny, because I'm so serious. I'm just such a serious person. And so trying, really thinking about play. And of course I should be playing. but it's really interesting. Anyway, I clearly haven't formalized my thinking around these things, but just to let you know that you know, we're always shifting, we're always moving on, things are always changing, and you can expect me to share more of that stuff in 2015. Really, it's going to be my big focus in 2015 is really going to be fiction and exploding into creativity, which I'm really excited about. So I feel like I'm getting all this stuff out of my head now. I will be writing another book for authors on mindset, because I do feel like that's what I'm getting into next. So that will, but that's probably going to take another year because there's so much of it. It's so interesting. Okay, enough waffliness. Let's get on with the interview, which I think you will really enjoy. So the podcast is sponsored by the fantastic Kobo Writing Life, and their support pays for the hosting. And my time in producing the show is sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to the 15 people supporting on Patreon, patreon.com. And a shout out to my new supporter this week, sci-fi365.net, bargain science fiction ebook deals via email. So if you like science fiction, it's kind of book bub for science fiction at sci-fi365.net. And if you want to, you can support the show at patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books, which I always appreciate. Right, here's a little word from Kobo Writing Life, and then I'll get into the interview.
Hi, this is Mark Lefebvre. I'm the director of self-publishing and author relations for Kobo, and we are very, very excited to be a sponsor of the Creative Pen podcast. Something I wanted to share with Creative Pen listeners is the fact that via Kobo Writing Life, you can set your book to free at any time for as long as you want. There's no exclusivity requests. I would advise authors, though, who are looking to set their book to free, to think about it as part of a strategy. What is your goal to set it for free? Are you looking for more readers? Are you trying to garner reviews? Or are you using this as a funnel to get people into your catalog? Come to KoboWritingLife.com, where we discuss such things, and check out the Kobo Writing Life podcast, which is also linkable from the blog. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn of the Creative Pen podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Orna Ross. Hi Orna.
Hi Joanna.
So great to have Orna back on the show. So just a little introduction. Orna is a poet, an award-winning and best-selling literary fiction author, and founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors, also voted one of the top 100 most influential people in publishing last year, which is pretty amazing. Orna also blogs and writes non-fiction books on creativity. And today we're talking about her latest book, Creating Money, Creating Meaning. So big stuff, Orna. So first up, tell us a bit about this Go Creative series of books and what they mean for people in general.
Yeah, it's actually creativism, which is a new word. So creativity is something we normally associate with poetry, writing, literature, music, dance, performing arts, you know, what we think of as creative pursuits, artistic pursuits, perhaps. But this is something slightly different. This is about applying the creative process to things that we don't normally consider to be creative. So it arose out of work that I was doing years ago, really, and it also arose out of my own life, and it arose particularly around this question of money. So this book that I'm bringing out now has a really long gestation period. If I think about it, it is 10 years since I gave my first Creative Money, Creating Meaning class, and it is probably about 12 years or 15 years, yeah, since I actually asked myself the question, what if I stop treating money as everybody tells me I should treat it in a sort of conventional way, which really didn't suit me. I found soul crushing, to be honest. And what if I applied the very same process that makes a book to the project of making money? Might that work? And it did work, and I loved it, and it was fun, and it just completely liberated the whole experience for me. And then at the time I was teaching in university in Dublin, and we did a lot of outreach work in different community groups, so with women particularly. So women who were maybe recovering from drug abuse or prisoners or, you know, in various kinds of difficult situations, immigrant groups and so on. So I began to use the same principles and practices and processes with them to see, you know, did it work kind of universally? It was my sense that it did, that it is a very identifiable process, and we see it everywhere in life, and that it should work for everybody. So certainly, it seemed to go down really well. And so here I am now, kind of trying to put all the different notes and things into a book. Originally, a lot of the research and stuff was done from an academic perspective, so trying to get all that academic talk out of it and make it a book for the general reader. So it's been a bit of a challenge. And what started as one book has fractured off into lots of, I was going to say small books, but actually, we're not that small. So yeah, huge project.
Yeah, it is. And so I'm interested particularly because creative people and money, there's a real kind of mindset issue. How can people listening shift their mindset around money to, like you just, you know, it was fun. I think everyone's going, what? Fun? What are you talking about? How can people make that shift?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that mindset really well. It was my own mindset. And when I had that mindset, I think what it was typified by was ambivalence. So on the one hand, I wanted more money. I needed more money. On the other, I was kind of pushing money away because I was thinking, you know, ugh. So I grew up in the Ireland of Charlie Haughey, and she was highly corrupt. And corruption was everywhere in our government, and money, war, you know, all of the things that we associate with money that we think of as being sort of bad things, they impinged on my consciousness, let me put it that way. And I was quite, having been brought up a Roman Catholic, you know, the whole Christian thing of it's easier for a rich man to get through the eye of a needle, blah, blah, blah. So I had sort of taken in a lot of that, but at the same time, I wanted more. So there was this constant kind of ambivalence, as I say, two things fighting against each other. And I just found myself overworking, under-earning, undercharging, giving myself away. And I think this is really typical behaviour, particularly among, I call it the female fear of money, if you like, but it's something that men can suffer from too. And it's an energy as opposed to something that's linked to your biology. It's a mental condition, and it's very, very common among women, and it's very, very common among creatives. And you can change it. But it's not something you say, you know, what can people who are listening do? It's not something you can do in a minute. And I think that therein lies a lot of the misconceptions that we hear about how easy it is to change your relationship with money. It's actually, because money is connected, money is nothing in and of itself. It's just a symbol of the energy we exchange with each other. It doesn't have any real substance, and because of that, it's actually connected to everything in our lives. And so changing our relationship with it will be just like changing your relationship with a spouse or a child. It's deep, and it will call on you to go deep. And so it's not something that can be done in 5 minutes. The reason people have a negative mindset around money is because we pick up a huge amount of what we think about money from our parents, first of all, and our family situation, our money situation, workplaces, friends, and so on. And there is a real habit energy in our society of dissing money and putting money down. So on the one hand, we all think we want more. On the other hand, we're always complaining and sort of, if you think of money, and this is probably the quickest and easiest way to begin a mindset shift, if you start to think of money, almost personify it and make a person out of it, is it male or female, and begin to think of yourself as having a relationship with this entity, person, thing, and then just look at your behavior and look at the way you talk about it and look at the way you would talk to it, maybe, and look at how you behave around it and ask yourself, you know, if that was a person, would they want to hang out with you? Would they feel you liked them, and so on? So you begin to see very quickly that you have more than likely, if you don't have enough money, you're more than likely pushing it away at some level that you're not particularly conscious of. So what the book does is it begins there. It begins with the sort of the debris and rocks and boulders that we've kind of put in the way of money flow, and begins with dissolving those. So the first thing you have to do is get out of what in the Go Creative series is called a con mindset, which is kind of conventional thinking and conceptual thinking, and indeed thinking full stop. So a lot of the early exercises in the book are about deconstructing thought patterns and getting you to a place where actually you can relate to money without thinking very much at all.
And it's interesting, I guess the way you're talking about kind of welcoming money in is a bit like some, you know, Stephen Pressfield, certainly in The War of Art, talks about his rituals around creation, where he welcomes the muse into, you know, before he starts writing, he, you know, he welcomes the muse and kind of puts that positive spin on opening energy for creativity. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
It's exactly the same. So exactly the same way in which a book is made, an artwork is made, money is made. It's the very same 7-stage process that brings both of those things into being when you're working with it consciously. And we're all going through that process all day, every day. We just don't realize it. So an example I often use is dinner. You know, if you're going to make dinner for yourself, you begin the process by framing the intention to make dinner. Then you kind of think about the idea of what you're going to have. You go off and you collect the ingredients, and you actually do the drafting of putting it together. You taste a bit, you add this spice, you add that spice, which is the clarification phase, and then eventually you complete and present it. And we don't think about that as a 7-stage creative process, but it actually is. And it's the very same process that over a year will make a novel, and over a lifetime will make a money life. And so the second part of the book, once we've kind of cleared and unlearned a lot of the negative patterns around money and begun to kind of make them go away, which is, you know, something that draws on people not just at the level of thought, but also at the level of feeling, and then at the level beyond feeling, what we call the transcendent level. So it's very much about getting into the place where you're not thinking so much about money and relating to it in a different way. And then you're ready for the second stage, which is The second phase of the book, which is about going through those seven stages. So yeah, exactly like what Pressfield does. And these are the kinds of things, those rituals and that way of connecting with money is what makes it fun. You were talking about fun earlier. That's, you know, you start to develop a very unique and individual relationship. So it's just exactly the way you want to do it and not the way your mother thinks you should do it, or, you know, your spouse or your children or anybody else, or even your harsh inner critic self thinks you should do it. It's about allowing it to be as much fun and as good as it can be.
Mm. You say that though, but I feel that money particularly, we know is one of the key reasons that, you know, marriages break up. You know, it's one of the things that people really fight over. So money mindset can't be in a vacuum. It actually has to relate to other people. So how do people kind of practically deal with those kind of relationship issues when it comes to money?
Yeah, I think the main thing and the challenge and is always to focus back in on your own situation. So very often when we're having fights about money, and I believe me, I'm the expert in this area because I've been married for you know, far too many years. I can't count them anymore to the same person, but we have very different money styles. His is a very much a conventional money style, and mine is very much creative. And it took us a long time to get to a point where we completely respected each other's style and valued what the other brought, because actually it's never completely creative or completely conceptual. It's always a mix of both. And in fact, both are meant to be used together. It's like you can't go walking on one leg. When we try to be just conventional, which we do in our society, we have a very materialist, rationalist approach to money, extremely so, and anything that, you know, wanders away from, even in a tiny way from that, is very frowned upon. When we weigh down too heavily on one side or the other, we actually get out of balance. So you do come to a point of mutual respect, but I think the way in which you get there is very much about understanding your own relationship. So very often the fights are about you trying to get the other person to see it your way. You're trying to get the other person to do it your way. And certainly speaking for myself and for a lot of the people that I've worked with over the years, you're not very good at understanding what's actually going on within yourself. Once you know what you're doing and you're confident about what you're doing, actually, everybody else falls in around you. It's when you're confused and afraid, because there's great fear around money. And I think that's what causes a lot of the conflict, both at the individual level and the societal level. And as I said, the first part of the book is very much about deconstructing those fears, understanding them, knowing they're there, because very often they're unconscious. We don't even know we hold them.
Mm. So that's kind of at quite a high level of discussion, I think. So let's try and get a bit more practical.
Different money style, Joanna.
Yes, well, this is my podcast, so I get and I do try and get practical. But no, you actually have practical activities in the book. And you've just talked about a seven stage process. So although you do have that kind of mindset piece, you also do have these practical steps of changing. So give us a couple of those, you know, practical steps, or that some of those stages, so that people can start putting this into practice.
Okay. Yes, the book does try to marry the practical and the sort of the theoretical. When I say theoretical, I mean only at that sort of level, creative theory. And it also then tries to look at societal consequences of how we behave individually as well. So that those three things are going on through in it all the time. So the seven stages of creation are, first of all, and the most important one, is intention. So first, there are three phases. There's the vision phase, and then there's the making phase, and then there's the revision phase. So again, this applies no matter what you're making. And each of those three phases then breaks down into the seven stages. So the first stage is intention. So you set your intention, whatever that might be. And it's a creative intention. So you set it and then you let it go. You know that you don't do it all by yourself. You actually do it in conjunction with life, and you let life kind of help you along a little bit of the way. And you then go into the second stage, which is incubation.
Just given as an example, what is an example of an intention in this case?
I mean, it could be an amount of money. It could be $1 million. It could be to match your spending to your income. It could be anything, really. So it would begin, if I was working with somebody, we'd begin, first of all, by making sure that they set a good intention. And a good intention is one that you feel you can actually align with. So it's not just something plucked out of the sky. You know, everybody thinks they want $1 million, but actually they don't, because that would require them to do certain things in their life in order to make that come about. And they don't actually want to do those things. So you would work through all that ambiguity first. So set your intention, then you incubate your intention, just like you would with a novel. You don't sit kind of worrying at it all the time. You actually let it settle. You let it kind of go deep. And while you're doing that, you do the third stage, which is investigation, which if you were doing a book, you'd call it research. And that would be, again, people, you know, say they want to make more money, have more money, you know, have a good relationship with money, but they never read, learn, study, or engage with it at any level. So if somebody is serious about wanting to get a good kind of money life under them, they need to change their behavior around money. So that would mean informing themselves and beginning to look at reading newspapers like the Financial Times, for example. Now, that might be something that you absolutely hate to do. And because we're working in a creative way, you don't do things that you hate to do. But you do try all sorts of things. So we're always in experiment and exploratory mode. And a lot of people don't do things because they assume they won't enjoy doing them. And so a lot of this, the early stages, the intention, the investigation, the incubation, a lot of work goes in at those stages before any real kind of concrete money work is done. And then when they're done properly, the actual making, the investing and the you know, the job or whatever it is that's actually going to be the money vehicle, that kind of takes off. Generally, what happens when people try to make more money is they completely neglect those creative, those early stages. And because they neglect them, their money plans just fall in a heap. They never actually implement them. So they're constantly kind of fighting, trying to catch up with themselves in terms of debt or whatever, disappointing themselves, letting themselves down, sabotaging themselves. It's because they have done the work at the creative level. So while it can all sound a little bit kind of vague, it's actually key. Without it, it doesn't work.
So that stage, I've failed a lot with money, but when I decided to do this for a living, I downsized, got rid of debt, sold my house, you know, really changed the way I was living because of what I wanted. So that, does that fit into your, I guess, your intention and investigation stage? And only then could I really then start creating the new life?
It's a really brilliant example, and thank you for giving it to me for the book, because it really does illustrate some of the points that I'm making there really, really well. It's a fantastic example, and it will, I think, and this is what possibly frightens people from ever even going there in the first place. You know, I think we sense at some sort of level that engaging with money in this sort of creative way will change us. And will ask us to do something that, you know, we haven't been doing. And people fear change, even though when they actually start making these changes, they're always thrilled. I've never known anybody to kind of go into this process and not be absolutely delighted with it, you know, once they get going. But before you get going, you can be actually quite fearful about it. So, yes, that's absolutely right. In those first three stages, we'd be working out what exactly will this intention ask of you? What are you prepared to do? What's negotiable? What's not negotiable? All that sort of thing.
And what you really want is, like you said, you know, originally I think I said I wanted $1 million, and, you know, that's actually not the point. What we want is creative freedom. That's probably the number one. I mean, we want to eat, but, you know, and I want to travel. But to me, there are things that are more important than owning a house or a car, for example.
Yeah, whereas for me, owning my own home is really important. And everybody will be different in terms of what they want. And most of us haven't actually really worked out what we really want. And we kind of assume we want it all when we're young, that we're going to have it all. And then we kind of realize we're not going to have it all, and we have to select. And sometimes we end up being disappointed with what life has selected for us, and so on. So it's quite complex. And that's the thing about money, because it is, you know, an empty substance, and it is connected to absolutely every part of ourselves and our lives. And so working with it in this way, and growing it in this way, it will touch into every aspect of our lives. And, you know, sometimes it may call on us to break up relationships, to let go of friendships, to change country, to, you know, again, I haven't seen anybody embark on this trip without some pretty major changes coming in. So, yeah, it is exciting and it is fun.
Yeah. So, OK, so we've covered intention, incubation, investigation. Now we're going to start on the making bit, I guess.
Yeah.
What's in that?
Making phase has two stages in it. The first stage is drafting. So you decide. So give me an intention. OK, just a notional intention.
For people listening, you know, replace my day job income so I can resign and be a full time author.
Perfect. Okay. So what you want to do then is you want to draft it first. So it's not likely that if you decide you want to do that, that you're going to walk out of your job and just, you know, tomorrow set up as an author. So you're going to have to go through a drafting phase where you begin to test out what being an author actually means, what stage you are at in terms of your writing abilities, and what sort of options are available to you. Now, of course, the revolution in publishing in the last 10 years means that this is actually a much more tenable sort of wish than it used to be in the old days, when you really were looking at a sort of literary lottery in terms of making an income. Whereas now, as an indie self-published author, you can approach it in a much more business-like sort of way, as you know only too well. So first you draft it, and then after the drafting phase, when you've got a real sense of what the project looks like, then you begin to do what we call clarification. So you look at what, in other words, you go through the entire process of what being an author and earning your money would look like, and you try out and make sure that you have really thoroughly investigated everything that is meant there, and you have actually done what is necessary. And then you do the second part of the making phase, which is amplification, which is about looking at what really worked for you and what did not work for you, what's to be let go and change, and what you want to take in more of. And then when you've gone through that part, when you've really worked out, that's about deepening, essentially.
I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
So now that is really interesting, okay, because I think for people listening, I know a lot of people will possibly be in the, let's say, the drafting stage. And what we've got to say is this is not the same process as writing a book. So there are people who may have already written books who are still in the drafting stage of your money stages, yeah? So, for example, I would say I was in that drafting stage when I was possibly still at working my day job. I had a couple of books, I had a website, you know, I was maybe 3 years into this whole writing journey. I knew how to self-publish, I knew a bit about marketing, but I was still working out the process of how this worked in terms of earning so that I could give up my job. And then the clarification phase, I actually feel, it's funny, see what you think, but I think I'm now coming to the end, possibly my current clarification phase of writing a book on marketing and writing a book on business for authors, I feel like I suddenly feel like I understand how this business works. By writing that book, I understand how it works. Is that example correct, or have I got that wrong?
Yeah, except that I would see you as a little bit further down the line. So I would see you as having finished the next phase as well, which is the editing phase. So ideally, amplification and editing go hand in hand very often. But yes, you've got the outline of it there. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that in that process of drafting, as you drafted your business, you consciously didn't do certain things as an author that you could have done. And then you unconsciously did the same thing. And what you do in the amplification phase is you begin to really understand who you are as not so much as a writer in terms of, you know, your skill base or your craft base, but your business model. So what you will and won't do as in your own particular, because there's a thousand ways to be an indie author, there's a thousand ways to shape up your content. And for everybody, I mean, we're talking about authorship here, but this is true for everybody, no matter what their business is. We now live in a world where there are far more opportunities than we are ever going to be able to avail of. So it isn't about finding opportunities now so much as it is about amplifying and clarifying exactly what it is we want to choose to bring into our business model if we're running our own business. Or if it's a situation with our boss or we're climbing the career ladder or whatever, it's exactly the same sort of interrogation process that you'll go through. I realise that it's sounding a little bit vague, because without a real live person and a real live kind of situation, and also because it takes time, this, it's not something that you do within an hour. But the process, in a sense, looks after the person within it.
Yeah, and you can obviously repeat this multiple times because, you know, you can change your mind. So I started out writing nonfiction only, and probably, you know, was getting to a point where my creativity wasn't satisfied, so I started writing fiction. And now my business model has shifted, you know, it's shifting more and more towards fiction all the time. So that, I guess, that fits within that kind of clarification phase where you almost keep circling back. Would that be right?
That's absolutely right. You keep circling all the time. You circle in the moment, you circle in the day, and you circle over the span of weeks and months and over a lifetime. So once you know what you're doing, you'll see this process is just whirring away there in almost everything you look at.
Mm. So did that, I got amplification, and then what was the last one?
So clarification would be what, if it was a book, you'd call editing. So that's kind of chopping away what you don't want, you know, and very much kind of, and then there is a completion phase. Even though you do, you know, go back and revisit, as you go through each phase, there comes a point where you realize, I've done what I set out to do. So if it is, you know, to leave the day job and become an author, I've reached the amount of income that allows me to do that. Or I've made the million. It's now, you know, it's there. I have a million clear over and above my expenses, or whatever your intention was. And completion always has a sort of a corresponding emotional moment. You know, there's always, that's why we, you know, when we do a creative work, we'll always launch it or have some kind of a party or something, because everybody recognizes that it is a big moment, the moment of completion. And then the next day you get up and you start it all over again. So completion is a phase is a stage, I should say, itself.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So that, you know, let's take someone now in my position. I wonder who that would be. let's take me. So successfully exited, you know, 3 years into understanding the business model, and you know, there are other people who are in this situation but feeling like they're not totally optimizing, let's say, their money situation. You know, people who want to make more money are now full-time authors, so you can say, yay, I've celebrated my one completion, but I want the next iteration. Do you have like a ramping up stage?
Yeah, I mean, essentially what you do is you go through the whole process again. So your intention has changed, though. So you're a different person now. You've got different things under you and different wants. And actually, it's really interesting because what happens a lot of the time is that people cut out before they reach the end of the process. And so they kind of, they don't, perhaps they don't realize there is a process and they've worked hard to do something, but they're actually only in stage four or the middle of stage four, because no matter what we're trying to do here, and, you know, writers always think writing books is so very, very hard. But, you know, it's always hard. Life in this sense is meant to be hard in the sense of challenging. So we're always supposed to be challenging ourselves. That's how we know we're alive. Once we've completed a cycle and got to completion on something, and it's really important to complete, and you know how I've been struggling with finishing energy around books because I was doing so many of them all at once on these books. Finishing energy is really important, and getting through, even if it's not perfect, even if it's not exactly, and even it can almost always say that the original intention will look different at the end. You'll reach it and you will have done what you set out to do, but usually you'll find you went a different way about it. All sorts of things happened that you didn't expect, and you ended up feeling quite different when you got there than you thought you would when you were setting the intention. So then if you want to ramp it up, then it's time to go back and look at the intention again and change the intention, ramp it up the intention, and see how do I need to change now to go from where I am to, because it's not usually about doing the same thing over and over. Usually if you want to amplify things, it requires you to change again, change something. So it might be, for example, that you are actually, let's just take the example, hanging around with authors who are doing things in a certain way and it's not actually a very productive way, or you mightn't be aligning yourself with the right people, or you might need more information about how you actually do, financially reach the levels you want to reach, you know, because I often find with writers particularly, but with lots of people, they say they want to make money and then they'll choose to do something that doesn't make money. And I particularly like to put a plea out actually to anybody who's you know, wants to be a writer and needs a day job, please don't make your day job in writing. It can be done, and you've done it very successfully, Joanna, but mostly, you know, it's making your way in writing and publishing is challenging. So to make the money in the day job, it's really advisable to do something where making money is relatively easy, and it's not particularly easy in those worlds. So people say, oh, I love writing, so I'll write and I'll also make writing my day job, is generally a bad plan. They generally end up burnt out, to be frank.
Yeah, and it's a good point. And when I hear people who say, I really hate, you know, the marketing side, I really hate the self-publishing part of self-publishing, you know, all the stuff we have to do as indies, it involves formatting stuff and testing stuff and, you know, doing all of that now. And I find that I love all of that stuff. So I'm really happy to be an indie, but do you think that unless people are embracing that whole thing, then as you say, they, you know, it's better off having a different job and then just do this for fun.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking particularly about this, you know, I would say there are three sort of modes in which you can work creatively and work well, and they are acceptance, enjoyment, and enthusiasm. So we can't be enthusiastic about every single aspect of our work. Nobody is. But enthusiasm is obviously a very high level, intense state. And I think you have to be enthusiastic about whatever you're creating in order to create really well. Enjoyment is also, a bonus. And that sort of energy will carry you a lot further than stress or discipline or, you know, beating yourself across the back of the head with a stick. And acceptance is a really important mode, because there are parts of a job that you're not going to love. But if you can't accept, enjoy, or be enthusiastic about something, then don't do it. Just don't do it, because you're pushing against energy all the time. And there are other things that you would enjoy or could accept or could actually get enthusiastic about that you should be doing instead. So in terms of the writers, and it's no different for indies or trade published or hybrid, or, you know, any writer now needs to reach their reader. They need to use these fantastic tools that we've been given, which are an absolute gift from the heavens, you know, and writers are complaining about them. I just don't understand it. It makes no sense whatsoever. The way to enjoy all of that is to, again, be creative about it. So to see it not as the opposite, oh, my creative work is over there writing, and as soon as I turn to anything to do with money, I'm in, you know, some sort of grubby little world where I'm selling my soul. No. You know, the challenge is to find what would make that world exciting and creative and dynamic and alive for you, and go and do it. So, you know, there's always work involved, work at the physical level or at the emotional level, or, you know, at the creative level. There's always work going on. And when you've stopped working and you're complaining, then you're using positive energy, you know, you're leeching yourself, draining yourself of positive energy that could be used to actually create the life that you want to have.
Mm. And I feel that, you know, there's quite a... Well, around the indie sort of space at the moment, there's quite a lot of Kindle Gold Rush mentality, and, you know, I call it comparisonitis as well. And I feel that sometimes, you know, when you compare yourselves to people who are selling loads and making like 50 grand a month and stuff like that, and you wonder why that's not you. And I always try and reframe it as aspirational rather than comparisonitis as such. How should people be changing that energy and thinking about those type of things?
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do with envy is kind of see what is it exactly that you envy, and then how can you actually create that within yourself. So, you know, if you envy somebody because they're selling loads, I would unpick that, and there could be lots and lots of things going on there that have nothing to do with, you know, what it ostensibly looks like. You just wish you had more money, but actually a wish for more money is usually a wish for something else. So depending on the person, you'd go down into it and find out exactly what was at play there, and then work on getting that for yourself. So when you're happily and creatively engaged, you don't compare. So, you know, nobody else can write, for example, books that you can write. And in terms, if we started to think about our engagement with money in the same way, so that nobody else can have the actual individual relationship that we can have, and rather than there's an amount and she or he is getting that and I'm not, and therefore there's this gap and, you know, I'm feeling bad, that is again a big energy drain. And but there's a bit of work to do to find out what's really going on there.
Mm. And that bit of work to do, you're a big advocate of free writing. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, free writing is the practice. There are three practices in the Go Creative world. One is inspiration meditation, which is a sort of specifically creative practice. There's free writing, which is more conceptual, and then there is mind-free movement, which is physical, so kind of a body, mind and spirit practices. And they're all practices in releasing and letting go, you know, because it isn't, as I was saying there at the beginning, it's very much about clearing out what needs to go. And once you clear the space, the flow looks after the rest. So if you're very focused on amounts of money or how you're doing, or charts and things, you know, all the things that go with conventional approach to money, that can create stress. And the problem with that kind of stress is that you're always trying to get somewhere in the future rather than creatively. You're always in now. You're always in the present moment if you're creatively engaged. Free writing is a fantastic practice for all sorts of things. It is a clearinghouse. It siphons off a lot of the sort of petty and small-minded ideas and things that are always floating around our heads. It's also a great way you talked about Stephen Pressfield and ritual. It's a great ritual with which to start the day, and not just for writers. I mean, it is fantastic for writers, but for everybody, because when you write fast, and free is fast, raw, exact, but easy, it's a very simple method. When you write fast, you actually get to the point of writing without thinking. So you're writing ahead of your thoughts, and in a sense, you're almost like you're taking dictation. You're not writing from a willed place. And that's very powerful. The thoughts and insights and ideas that arise when you're in that mind state are a thousand times more powerful than when you're writing in a very conscious, choose-the-pen sort of willed way. And free writing is just intensely liberating. So the subtitle of the free writing book is Unblocking Life's Flow. So it really is about getting those blocks out of the way. Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I've just seen it do so many amazing things for so many people. I never tire of passing it on.
Yeah. And you're very wise, Orna. You're my wise friend. And
oh dear. That means I'm very old.
No, but what my last question is, why has this book been so hard for you to write when, you know, you have been, like you said, it's been 10 years of this process. I know, you know, you free write, you've got all these creative books. What's been happening with you that has made this such a difficult personal journey?
Yeah. It has been a very challenging book. And the reason it has been so challenging is because it has made me, and I think this happens to everybody at every level, and the practices sustain you and they hold you through a process, but, you know, the process still happens, and the process is one of great change. So when I started, it's a very long story, but when I started working in this way originally, I set out to set up one of those businesses, the writing business beside the writer. So I was a novelist and I was writing poetry, and I decided to set up a writing school and a literary agency, which I did in Dublin, and we had some success and it was all going very nicely. But I also was working with this women's group that I told you about, and We self-published a book long before self-publishing kind of happened. We self-published a book called The Woman's Way to Wealth. And I co-wrote that book with a woman who ran a counselling centre in Dublin, because I felt the book needed, you know, that sort of weight in it, and I didn't have experience in that area. Anyway, long story short, this person turned out to be, suffice it to say that she has ended up in the High Court with people bringing cases against her. Her business model was very suspect. And when I heard about it, I was appalled. When I heard what was going on in that centre, I was appalled. And it was a huge sort of a bombshell in the middle of, because we had spoken very, very much about the same sort of principles, and I had set up this organization on those principles, and she had gone off and using the same principles created something very different. And I was really, I suppose, very taken aback by that. And I felt I needed to pause and stop and think about these principles. And did they, you know, were they what I thought they were, and all of that? As well as that happening, I also got sick. Another problem erupted on the business. My spouse was offered a job in Brussels that he didn't take, which he knew would make him redundant. And we ended up coming over to London. So it was just a big, huge mass of change, the kind of change I was talking about earlier. Now, the process and the practices and all of that sustained me through it, in the sense that I rode the wave and was happy, but it did give me pause. So in terms of writing the book now, I think the challenge for me has been to encapsulate all that money is you know, at the, all those different levels, the social level, the personal level, the creative theory and the practical, and get it into one small book. But mainly the challenge was sitting and seeing, did it hold? You know, had I been misguided? How, you know, how had it gone wrong? What was life trying to tell me? And integrate, I suppose, all of that and understand it. So it took me a long time.
So do you feel this is a form of completion for you?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a completion of something that started in 2004, went haywire in 2008, and is only now being completed in 2014.
And I think that's a really good point. And I would say the journey I was talking about, my journey, you know, I think is stop, start for probably 20 years, but certainly this particular phase of it has taken 6 years. So that long-term thinking has to be at the basis of all of this, right?
Yeah, it's like there are two timescales. There is sort of the lifespan and however long it wants to take, because you can't rush these things. And then there is the moment, there's just right now. And I think once you stay rooted in the moment that you're in, then it can take as long as it likes. Because if you keep returning to that creative space, and again, the book is full of exercises that take you back into that space, if you keep going back there, you're safe. No matter what's going on around you, no matter what, how puzzling and chaotic and crazy and confused the relationship seems to be, or the money situation seems to be, if you stay in that moment, you're safe.
Mm. Yeah, and I feel that you're, because of course, what's so funny is we both have these books coming out. Mine is Business for Authors and is really, you know, how to be an author entrepreneur, very much focused on the how to be side of it. And I, you know, I'm very structured and everything. And I feel like your book is like a partner, like a counterpoint, but a very important sort of mental side of money, which I started talking about the mindset, and then I just completely pulled back. Maybe I pulled back because your book was coming and I didn't know.
Maybe. Your book is fantastic and I absolutely love it, and I'm learning loads from it and will continue to. And it is perfectly possible to use that energy, you know. But I think when you start to talk about mindset, it's deep. It's, you know, and that's probably why you pulled back, because you probably said, oh, if I go in there, it's a different book.
And it is. Yeah. In this case, it's your book. So I really hope people will check out the book. It is not, I would say it's not a quick read, as in you could read it quickly. But the point is that the exercises are, you know, if you really get into the exercises, then you can actually do some really good soul searching around money. So definitely, you know, fascinating stuff. And right. So where can people find you and the book and all your other books online?
Well, ornaross.com, which is having an upgrade at the moment, and should be ready next week or the week after, but I'm there. And the books are on Amazon, Kobo, and all the usual outlets. So the book is available on pre-order on Amazon at the moment. So
just remind people of the title again.
It's Creative Thank You, Joe. She wrote How to Market a Book, and I didn't. It's called Creating Money, Creating Meaning. And I don't think there'll be too many books with that title out there, so it should be easy enough to find.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Orna. That was great.
Thank you for featuring it.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.